Anyway, once when the attendant ignored the instruction of his superior not to torment Varga, Varga told him, "May God judge between you and I." The attendant, quite angry, galloped his horse to a spot by a spring to relax and smoke. As the cavalry got closer, they saw him on the ground, writhing in pain. He was shouting, "My belly is on fire. I am dying. Help me." Varga prescribed some remedy, but shortly the attendant died. Now look at Varga's benevolence. He felt quite guilty because he thought it was his words which caused the man's suffering and death. He said, had he known that his wishes would be so quickly answered, he should have prayed for his guidance. He said we should never curse our ignorant enemies, but pray for them. Here I wish to interject that those of us who believe in Baha'u'llah and have his teachings are more answerable for our actions than the ignorant. The officer in charge of the prisoners at the end of the trip became a Baha'i. How could he have done otherwise after witnessing everything firsthand? Upon their arrival in Tehran, they were placed in the stable of the father of the commander of the cavalry. The next day, Azizullah, the oldest son of Varga, who had left Zanjan earlier, came to visit them. Varga advised him not to return for the fear of being recognized and arrested. That day they took the prisoners in chains, surrounded by guards and attendants, with the executioners dressed in red in the forefront. The usual multitude of onlookers gathered to watch the march. They were taken for interrogation to the government building, where they were sentenced to be imprisoned. The prison chosen for them was where 60 notorious highway robbers and murderers were kept in chains. They brought their heaviest chain of Garagohar, nearly 110 pounds, which 44 years earlier had been placed on Baha'u'llah's blessed neck. All four, Varga, Ruhullah, Mirza Hussein, and Haji Iman, Varga's father-in-law, were chained together. Ruhullah's tender neck and body could not support the weight, so they put a wooden support for his segment of the chain. From the very first day, the captors, high and low alike, began looting Varga's belongings. Hajibuddaula, the murderer-to-be, who was the highest in rank and in charge of torture and execution of all who were considered enemies of the state, took the portrait of the Bab and gave it to the king. The next in line insisted on taking a white robe which had belonged to Baha'u'llah. Varga begged in vain for him to leave it alone. Not only did he take it, but the depraved man appeared dressed in it to taunt Varga. At the end, when all was gone, Varga remarked that everything precious was taken away, but it was a worthwhile sacrifice in the path of God. Mirza Hussein writes that they had fastened the heavy chains on them in order to be bribed for exchange for a lighter chain, and since they did not have money, the chain stayed on. They even starved them. There was a well-to-do man who had been disfavored by the government but was allowed to keep a servant in prison to attend his needs. The captors tried to starve the Baha'is by not giving them the usual meager prison ration. The wealthy man, seeing the situation, ordered the favorite Persian dish of chilo kebab for all prisoners. Every prisoner was given a dish by the attendants, except the Baha'is. When the servant told the rich man about what did the attendants do, he flew into a rage and ordered a new supply of deluxe chilo kebab with all garnishings for the Baha'is, who savored it after days of starvation. Imagine the first round when in front of the starving Baha'is, dishes were passed to others. If you ever have tasted or smelled chilo kebab, you would understand what I mean. The rich man was heard to say, "My purpose for feeding all these weeds was to feed a few flowers among them, and no one should have stopped my intention." He was very kind. He even gave money to everyone so Baha'is could benefit too. What a contrast. Now the Jubilee was drawing near. Varga's ex-father-in-law, who was in Tehran, sent a message to Varga to compose a poem for the occasion that it might please the king, so he would order the release. Varga answered that his pen and tongue have moved only to praise Baha'ullah and Abdul Baha. He did not wish to lie, and also he did not wish to pollute his poetic talent. Mirza Hussein writes, "One night when Ruhullah was asleep under the chains, Varga caressed his 12-year-old son's face and said, 'O God, I pray that this sacrifice of mine be accepted by you.' When I heard this, it tore my heart and I went out of my mind. I wept quietly until I regained my senses. And suddenly a great feeling of detachment from this mortal life dawned on me." The next day, a photographer was brought to the prison to take the only picture of us four Baha'is in chain. While photos were being taken, Varga was noticeably trembling under those chains. Mirza writes, "I asked Varga about the reason. Varga replied, 'Taking photo of prisoners has an obvious meaning, and that a fierce test is approaching.' Upon hearing this, I began to tremble and started to pray." You may wonder why Varga, who begged Baha'ullah for martyrdom, now was trembling, realizing the nearness of the hour. You see, it was his physical side he was afraid of. Didn't Jesus Christ, on the day before his crucifixion, knowing exactly what was coming, pray, "O Father, if it be thy will, let this cup pass from me. Nevertheless, not as I will, but as thou will." Another emotional up and down, agonizing Varga. Within the past couple months, he saw the soldiers with cocked guns at first stop during their transfer from Zanjan to Tehran. Then later in Tehran, they were marched behind the executioners dressed in red. Neither was the answer to his wish. Now, this time, with their photo taken, the hour was as much at hand as it could ever get. But he heard the jovial prisoners so excited about the nearness of the Jubilee. They were talking that the king had pledged to pardon and release all prisoners on that occasion so they could pray in gratitude for his long life. those agonizing hours did not last too long. When the eye of that ferocious storm swiftly changed direction. The velocity of the storm is now building up by the minute. Then came that fatal Friday before the day of Jubilee. Being exact, the first day of May, 1896. The king had been in the habit of on Fridays going to a shrine near Tehran. How could he miss it on this festive and historical occasion? An anarchist pan-Islamist political faction, which was both anti-monarchy and anti-Baha'i, heard that Barghu and a few Baha'is were thrown into the prison and a trunk full of Baha'i books was confiscated. They found the timing perfect to strike. They plotted the assassination of the king, being certain that Baha'is would be blamed for. You see, 44 years earlier, three revengeful young Babis inflamed by the martyrdom of the Bab tried to kill the same king, which failed. That time the king was about 20 years old. Now, in their calculation, they had nothing to lose. One bullet and two targets. The king dead and the Baha'is massacred. The assassin hid within the shrine, and on that bloody Friday, when the king entered the interior of the shrine, he pretended to deliver a petition to the king when, at point blank, he shot the king in the heart. As it had to be, even his death did not stop the oppressive measures he and his underlings had viciously championed during the dark and long period of his reign. As soon as the fiendish Hojibur Dowleh, the top man who had taken the Bab's portrait from Barghu, heard about the king's assassination, his blood began to boil. He was the same person who, 44 years earlier, after the attempt on the life of the king, was badly frustrated at not being able to kill Baha'u'llah. Remember how he took a defected servant of a prominent Babi a few times to the Siyah Chawl to identify Baha'u'llah as a plotter. The servant had seen Baha'u'llah numerous times in his master's home, but in that prison, every time he denied ever seeing Baha'u'llah before. Now the king is dead, and he has one of the prized followers of Baha'u'llah in his vicious clutches. He, without the knowledge and authorization from the Prime Minister, rushed into the prison, taking a few attendants and executioners with him. He barged into the prison like a mad dog, with his face red with rage. He shouted that all prisoners should be locked in chains and stocks. The terror-stricken prisoners, not knowing what had happened, went numb. Mirza Hussein writes, "They took the four Baha'is chained together to the prison yard, supposedly for questioning. When we saw the soldiers on the rooftops with their guns pointing at us and the executioners dressed in red, we sensed this was no trial." The attendant in charge of keys was ordered to unlock the chains of Barghu and Ruhollah. The atmosphere was so tense that due to shaking of his hands, he could not do it, and someone else had to do it. They took Barghu and Ruhollah to a long corridor and slammed the door shut. When we saw an attendant bringing the bloody dagger of Hojib to wash it in the courtyard pool, and then another man walking away with Vargo's clothes, we knew what was done to him, but had no idea about Ruhullah. Then, after a thumping sound, the doors were flung open, and the panic-stricken Hajib dashed out saying, the other two should wait until tomorrow. That tomorrow never came. The timing of martyrdom was about 2.5 hours before sunset. Mirza goes on to state, when Haji Iman, Barga's father-in-law, and I were taken back to the prison, we found our bedding and all belongings gone. We were so shocked and numb by what we saw in the courtyard that we sat speechless on the damp floor of the prison. How exactly Varga and 12-year-old Ruhullah were martyred, as brutal as it was, must be stated for the sake of history. How badly this narrator wishes that he could be excused from recounting such unspeakable atrocity. Friends, this is not an ordinary scene. This is the gory arena where ravenous, bloodthirsty beasts are unleashed against the innocent. This is the gruesome scene of martyrdom and sacrifice, and yet it is the sacred altar of love and immolation where Varga's cherished desire was finally fulfilled. It is not for children and the tender-hearted to listen to. But before I pause for some to leave or stopping the tape, let us realize that these two heavenly doves, having weathered all kinds of turbulences, did not survive the fierce gales of this storm. With their physical wings broken, they laid down their lives as a sacrifice in the path of their Lord. Thus, the silver-tongued nightingale and his prized son Ruhullah winged their flight to the apex, the eternal skies of the world of mysteries. Now there will be a pause. This is the ending of the story on that infamous May Day 1 century ago. Mirza Hussein states, as we sat down, stunned and unable to talk, the attendants surrounded us, discussing with laughter which piece of our clothing each one would be getting tomorrow. We were so numb that we did not care. I asked one of the attendants, whom we had befriended, to tell us the truth about what happened behind the closed doors of that long corridor. The attendant stated, as soon as the furious Hajib saw Varga, he shouted at him, you finally did what you did. Varga, not knowing about the assassination, quietly answered he was unaware of having done anything wrong. Then Hajib asked Varga, do you want me to kill you first or your son? Varga answered, it does not matter. The fiend pulled his dagger and plunged it into Varga's stomach and asked him, how are you feeling? And shaken and undaunted, that symbol of courage, that steadfast hero, with his last breath exclaimed, I feel much better than you do. Then they fastened his head, and 4 executioners fell upon him, severing his arms and legs piece by piece, while the blood was gushing out like a fountain. Ruhullah, watching dismembering of his father, was crying out, O father, O dear Father, take me with you. The evil Hajib walked to Ruhullah and said, Do not weep. I shall take you with myself, will get you an allowance, and obtain a post for you from the king. Ruhullah replied, I do not want your allowance or the post. I wish to join my father. Then he began to cry again. Defied and rejected, Hajib ordered a rope to hang him, but no rope could be found. So they put Ruhullah's tender neck in a loop of a bastinado post, where usually the ankles are placed. Two attendants, one on each end, lifted the post. They lifted Ruhullah until his convulsing body became limp. Then they laid his corpse on the ground. Hajib ad-Dawla, that bloodthirsty fiend, was not finished yet. He ordered the other two Baha'is to be brought. As soon as the doors of the corridor were flung open, the corpse of Ruhullah sprang up and fell with a thud 3 feet away. This terrified the evil Hajib, who ran for the door saying he will deal with the two others the next day. That next day was not to be. Because the political plot was discovered and the Baha'is were cleared, the new king, Muzaffar ad-Din Shah, was moderate and tolerant. Remember, Varga used to read poetry in the gatherings when he was a crown prince. Now he has the jeweled crown and Varga the crown of glory. Mirza Hussein and Haji Iman were released after a few months to recount the last months and the last hours in the lives of Varga and his 12-year-old son Ruhullah. They left for posterity the accounts of the unshakable constancy of the fearless poet and his son. No doubt, you knew with certainty that Baha'ullah's promise was inevitable. But nevertheless, the manner in which they were martyred was difficult to recount and heart-wrenching to hear. Before your wounded heart cries out, Where is justice? Permit me to read the following rendering of the history by Shoghi Effendi in God Passes By. Quote, Hajib ad-Dawla, that bloodthirsty fiend who had so strenuously hounded down so many innocent and defenseless Babis, fell in his turn a victim to the fury of the turbulent lords, who, after despoiling him of his property, cut his beard and forced him to eat it, saddled and bridled him, and rode him before the eyes of the people, after which, inflicted under his very eyes shameful atrocities upon his women folk and children. End quote. This tragic and heroic story, the complexity and mystery of which is way beyond our comprehension, will befittingly end with a pleasant and uplifting note. Abdul Baha conferred the rank of Hand of the Cause on Varga posthumously, and the guardian designated him as an apostle of Baha'ullah. His youngest son, Janabi Waliullah Varga, became a trustee of Hughullah and the Hand of the Cause during the ministry of Shoghi Effendi. After his passing, Shoghi Effendi appointed his eldest son, Dr. Ali Muhammad Varga, presently living, as a Hand of the Cause and the trustee of Hughullah. As you notice, his name is after the name of his martyred and illustrious grandfather, the silver-tongued nightingale, Mirza Ali Muhammad Varga. What a unique family.